Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Well, good morning, everyone. We've made it to the final hour. April Marie here. If you're not following me on social media, pretty much the only place I'm active these days is X, and that's APRYLMARIE. There's a 50-50 chance I might be giving it up mainly for Lent, but we'll see. I haven't figured out my Lent. For those of you who give up something for Lent, feel free to pop into my to the text line and tell me what you've decided to give up this year. There's a couple things I'm working on. I've started trying to do not just giving up something, but giving up something and making a good habit. So breaking a bad habit and also creating a good habit. Some of those obviously stick better than others. A couple of the ones I've done over the years have really stuck, and so I'm trying to get ready for those who Ash Wednesday is next week. If you are a Catholic listener, I don't know how many Catholic listeners there are at 106.5, but I know a lot of non-Catholics who also do Lent just as an opportunity for a 40-day reprieve from vices or habits or whatever it is. I'm looking again at, so all of that to say, you can find me on X. And if I suddenly go quiet, you know that I've given it up for Lent. It's pretty impossible to give it up and do what we do. I may limit myself to certain parts of the day. If you have successfully given up social media or internet browsing, as it were. That's the other thing, is since I consume so much news, I find myself not just on social media, but I'll follow a link to an outlet and then I'll spend 30 minutes looking at everything they've written that afternoon. Because I just like to know what's going on. Sometimes I've used this phrase now. I rage read. I literally look at what the leftist echo chambers and get pretty frustrated by that. Speaking of rage reading, I was looking yesterday the Media Resource Center, and they did an analysis on Apple News. And I don't know how many of you use Apple News. I assume not many, because they are so radically leftist. But they did a research into the morning headlines and they looked at left-leaning stories versus right-leaning stories throughout the month of December. The top stories on Apple News. So this is supposed to be a curated, like, what's happening today, what's going on in the world around you. And it's, obviously Apple's going to be lean left, but I wouldn't have even imagined this. The number of stories from the right that all had a left-leaning perspective, 620. How many had it from right-leaning outlets? Zero. Absolutely zero. And Brittany Hughes, if you don't know who she is, I encourage you to follow her, because she does some of the most absolutely factual responses to what's going on the left, especially. And she has my heart, because like myself, I am convinced that liberal white women they have had their minds poisoned. They are slowly rotting society. And whether it is by their, you look at the ones, the leftists out there following ICE and screaming and assaulting law enforcement officers and doing all sorts of madness related to that. You look at the leftist teachers out there, K-12 and college, the women out there who say they don't want families. You name it. One of the things I was looking at last night when I was going through my news, there's a video a woman posted. And here's where you know that they've crossed the line. I'll talk about my kids. I'll tell you I went and bought Valentine's. This is the first year my seven-year-old has a Valentine. I'm not sure I even said that this morning. It was really cute. I was having my mom panic last night. And I was like, oh no, Valentine's. And then the epiphany, oh no, Valentine's Day party. I was scheduled to bring fruit. I don't know why everybody signs up for cupcakes and cookies. I bring fruit. And so as I was getting ready and preparing for Valentine's Day last night, my boys did pretzels. They did one candy, one salty, one sugar thing to take to class. But my seven-year-old asked, he was like, I need like a Valentine. And he was trying to describe to me that he had a Valentine, but he didn't know how to say it. And it was so super sweet. And so I was like, yeah, baby, you're going to give every individual in your class one of these Valentines. And he's like, but I need a Valentine for one person. And I was like, each person gets one. Well, it turns out that his Valentine is in the other class. So he's in one first grade class and she's in another first grade class. And so, but they decided at the playground that they were going to be each other's Valentines and they were going to bring each other something special. And so, the kids went to sleep and I was doing my little 18, 19 work and I had a like mom moment because I think that's the first time any of my three kids have actually said I have a Valentine, and it was so sweet. And so so he took her a greeting card, and then when I went to Publix this morning I got a balloon as well, but very cute. But I'll talk about my kids and I'll brag on them. I'll brag on how just absolutely fantastically lucky I got with the luck of the draw with my 13-year-old daughter who's I'm just so proud of. But what I won't do is I'm not going to indoctrinate my kids. I'm very conservative and my kids know my politics, but I'm not going to take my kids and use them as political props in something that's absolutely abhorrent. So imagine my surprise when I look and one of the things trending online is this mother, and I kid you not, who posted a video of her helping her young daughter make an F ice sign, except the poster actually said the words. Can you imagine teaching your child to hate law enforcement? Teaching your child that, and it goes back to this idea, this we live in fear and we're teaching our kids to live in fear, that law enforcement is bad and wrong. It's absolutely insane. I'm gonna set off a text here, but Laura Ingraham posted, people whined about tiger moms, helicopter moms, soccer moms, but I'll take any of them over commie moms. And it's so true. It's so true. What are these women? And you know, I'm actually surprised. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that this woman has a child. But when you're this brainwashed, brainwashing her own child. All right, we're going to take a break here. Sorry, Tim. Tim said, has this turned into a women's show? It's not. I know. Every now and again, though. Every now and again. It always comes back to politics. You get 5 minutes about my family and then comes back to politics. We're going to come back. We'll get back into those national issues. No more mommy talk for me. Back in just a minute. You're listening to The Jeff Poore Show.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles, kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant.
Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside a movie with the Memphis Blues again.
April Marie here. I know. I got all into the whole the kids and the Valentines. I'm going to be thinking about this first Valentine's with my son having a Valentine through the weekend. It's big news in my household. All right. Thanks for indulging me there. I'm excited to have on the line with me former Congressman Mo Brooks, quite literally, one of my favorite people in politics. Welcome to the program, Congressman.
My pleasure. Appreciate the invitation.
Well, I don't live in Huntsville, but I was excited to see you that you're ready to come out of your retirement, looking this year, looking at going back to the joining the legislature. How's that going?
Well, it's going very, very well right now. Still early, as far as the public's concerned. And, you know, the primary is May the 19th. So we're less than 100 days away, and the countdown has begun. And I get my door-to-door brochures tomorrow, I hope.
Oh, nice. All right. A lot of people don't realize the state legislative races still can be won by knocking on doors and still can be won by that voter-to-voter contact.
Well, I think that is the case. And city council, board of education, county commissions that are in districts and legislative races, a lot of people prefer to rely on the money. Unfortunately, to get the money, you got to make promises to special interest groups that quite often are contrary to what's in the best interest of the public. And so I've tried to shun that as much as I can. When I was first elected to the legislature, I was the only legislator, my memory serves me correctly, to get elected with zero special interest PAC money. And so this go around, I'm trying the same approach. If I'm going to get back into the legislature, it's going to be with zero IOUs to the special interest that do so much harm to the general public.
Love that. Well, and I actually spent about an hour going through some of the big things going through the state legislature this year. Of course, they're hoping for a short and early session. Is there anything you're seeing that they're doing that is either making you excited or concerning you?
Well, I'm a little bit surprised that this Public Service Commission bill has come up where they no longer want to have the PSC members elected by the public. You've got to put forward a really strong case to deprive voters of a right that they have enjoyed for a long, long time. And I don't think that they have put forth that case or argument as well as they should. Time will tell. Perhaps more information will come out that justifies what's being done. And in my view, the best way to make sure that the Public Service Commission does what's in the best interest of the public, particularly vis-a-vis Alabama Power, is to restrict in a major way the contributions that the PSC candidates can receive. There needs to be a total divorce from Alabama Power, Alabama Power officers, Alabama Power managers, Alabama Power employees, Alabama Power contractors and subcontractors, and, you know, just go down the list. There needs to be a total divorce if you're going to be in judge of the rates that are given to Alabama Power to the detriment of the citizenry.
All right. Well, you're not taking PAC money. You're for getting Alabama Power money out of the Public Service Commission. I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit. Are you watching what's happening in D.C. right now? And, you know, the theatrics that have taken place in the last couple of weeks, everything from the sideshow with the Epstein files yesterday to some of these hearings about ICE.
I have been keeping a keen eye on those things. And quite frankly, the Epstein material is sensational. It involves sex. It involves powerful people. It involves powerful people taking advantage of underage girls for sex. And it's titillating. So it's going to get the media coverage, okay? But it is a huge distraction from the major challenges that America faces. And I wish we'd keep our eye on the ball better. By way of example, I read an article yesterday, kind of buried, that talked about the wrong direction that our deficit and debt picture is going and how the Congressional Budget Office just released its analysis, where its 9 and 10 year projections are significantly worse than they were just a year ago. And that's the kind of information that the public needs to look at if we're going to minimize our risk of going through a national insolvency and bankruptcy. The ICE, there ought to be public discussions about that. But in my view, in the absence of an ICE officer intentionally committing a crime, where he knows it's a crime and he commits it, we need to give them a tremendous amount of discretion to do the best they can under what are becoming very, very difficult circumstances. So you know, we'll see how that plays out. But if you're going to have laws, you need to enforce them. And that's what ICE is doing its best to do.
Yeah, I talked about that earlier. Steve Marshall this week or just yesterday came out and said, OK, not only do we want ICE here, we want more ICE officers and agents here. You know, the leftist media, AL.com's, you know, kind of freaking out about it. I feel like there's an, at least one, sometimes two ICE stories a day, you know, talking. And really, I'm convinced that some of these are just to make sure people know that there's the groups out there tracking ICE so they can, they're trying to promote what's going on in some of these blue states with some of these anti-ICE protesters who have not, they're not following the law anymore. At this point, they're doing vigilante stuff and they're assaulting officers and doing all sorts of illegal stuff. But I really do think AL.com wants a church here to be interrupted. I think they want people on the streets the way that we're seeing in Democrat cities.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. Local news media almost always wishes that their own news that they publish would get more viewerships, more clicks, more advertising revenue by some of these sensational things happening in the state of Alabama. Personally, I'm thankful that it's happening up in Minnesota and other cities, not in our state.
Yep, absolutely. I wanted to take, so you have spent years, obviously, in Congress. How long did you serve in Congress?
12 years.
12 years. But you were in the Alabama legislature before.
I was for a little over 8 years.
Now, are you going back a second time? I keep reflecting on Trump term one versus Trump term two. And the changes we've seen, I actually feel like Trump term two, he's gotten a lot more accomplished, has a lot stronger cabinet picks. Are we ready for a Mo version 2.0? What would that look like in Montgomery?
Well, that's what the voters of House District 20 up here in Madison County are going to have to decide. It's a district that has treated me very well over the years. I don't think I've ever lost a race in what are the geographic boundaries of House District 20, but the Special Interest Political Action Committees and their special interest money are going to come after me in a very, very big way. If I'm in Montgomery, then I hope I will be able to bring some knowledge, intellect, insight that is lacking simply because of, compared to what I have to offer, simply because of the breadth of my experiences. I've been a prosecutor in Tuscaloosa and Madison County, an assistant DA and a DA. I've been a legislator. I've been a county commissioner. So I'm familiar with the challenges that local governments have, a lot of them coming under state law. And then in Washington, D.C., I served 12 years as a United States congressman. And by the way, their procedures in Washington, in some ways, they're worse than the Alabama legislature. But in other ways, they're a whole lot better. And I'll give you an example. If I were to try to vote someone else on the House floor without proxy and in Congress when I was there, the proxy was a written statement saying I want my vote cast by so-and-so in this way on this particular bill, you know, I'd get in trouble. But in the halls of the fifth floor of the state house, which is where the House of Representatives is located, it's a common occurrence.
Yep.
And I think that's wrong. And that's something we need to change. We also need to give more power to individual legislators rather than being so much under the thumb of the Speaker of the House. The House Speaker in Congress, vis-a-vis his relationship with the members of Congress, he has much less power to force members to do things that are not in the public's interest than the Alabama House Speaker does. And so each of these little tools that the House Speaker has to act as a thumb on somebody, we need to change those so that the members of the Alabama House can better do whatever it is they hope to do for their legislators.
All right, I want to hold you over for 1 second, and then we'll wrap this up right after this break. Do you have a minute for that? All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
I still act and look the same. Won't
filling in for Jeff. Baby was born yesterday. So excited for him and his beautiful wife and family. You guys keep them in your prayers. Everybody's doing well, but new babies, exciting and somewhat stressful time. Congressman Mo Brooks on the line. Thanks for hanging in there with us, Congressman.
My pleasure.
I don't know if I think I mentioned this earlier. Jeff Poor's wife had his baby yesterday. Oh, yeah, because you've got granddaughters.
That's right. I've got 10 granddaughters, 5 grandsons, and I hear that Jeff right now is going one way only. He's got all boys.
He does. He does. It's fantastic. His poor wife, outnumbered. Well, as we were going to break, you were talking about some of the differences between D.C. and Washington. I'll ask you, so one thing I come back to this every year, I'm not from around here. I moved to Alabama after working for Congressman Paul Gosar. I thought I was going to take a quick break, spend 1 year here, and then go back and then end up somewhere else, but been here now almost 13 years. But one thing I always say is, where is the Freedom Caucus here, right? Where is the far right in Montgomery? Do you think do you think there's a hope as you're running? Have you heard from people who think there's a possibility of that coming to fruition?
Well, there ought to be a strong House Freedom Caucus in Montgomery. But unfortunately, our conservatives are very badly outnumbered, as I perceive the current situation. And the majority Republican versus minority Democrat gap is so wide that even if you were to create a House Freedom Caucus in Montgomery, you'd still have a question as to whether it can be effective. And in Washington, we have close majorities. So the House Freedom Caucus can control whether a bill passes or fails. And with that leverage, we get more good things done. You've got to have a House Freedom Caucus in Montgomery that is at least 20 to 30 people out of 105 to be able to hold sway.
It's amazing to me, you know, and I look at the different scores and the different rankings people will get. And, you know, they're not all the same. But Club for Growth recently released their rankings, and some of the Republicans were as bad as some of the Democrats, according to the things they ranked. You know, it's always surprising to me that Republicans in the state, I shouldn't say conservatives, Republicans in the state really do vote in such a margin, even when it's something that I think should go have a little bit more conservative sway to.
Well, the people who control Montgomery are the special interest groups. And I don't think it's even a close debate if someone wants to take the other side. And I'll just use as an example, I'm not going to name any names, but the legislative race I'm in, the gentleman I'm up against, 83% of his campaign contributions when he was first elected 4 years ago came from special interest groups. That's a lot of money from special interest political action committees, where it's over four-fifths of your campaign financing. And if you've got that across the board where special interests are that active versus the general public, well, then you're going to have a lopsided effect on who the legislators represent. The special interest groups that got them to the dance, is that who they're going to dance with? Or the citizenry that participated in a much lesser fashion, albeit they did have their vote.
Yep. That's a very valid point. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to call in. I know you've got campaigning to do, and the listening audience on this program are a little outside your district, but you offer an insight and wisdom from, like I said before, your time as a previous legislator in D.C. and even in Montgomery. So I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, April. You're very kind.
All right. Well, you take care. All right. That was Congressman Mo Brooks. I really do sincerely appreciate him taking the time to call us. You know, one of the, and he always say, you know, I look back at my time in D.C. and I worked for Freedom Caucus member of Congress. I work for a member of Congress who's known to be a bomb thrower, as an expression, but guys. And it's funny because I look back and he was a member of that group that did push things further to the right. He genuinely, that group, the Mo Brooks group, the Barry Moores, they did push things, and they got from leadership concessions, which were the kind of concessions that everybody runs on. And I really, you look at the bills that pass Montgomery any given legislative session, and of course you can tell year by year the difference in the priorities in Montgomery. But I look at what's happening there and I say, you know, look at the bills that pass quickly, the bills they want to push through, and then look at the bills that take a while, that take years. You're protecting girls' sports. You're protecting our classrooms from woke ideology. You're things to make the business climate friendlier. By the grace of God, one thing we have seemed to get right every year is what we're doing for our veterans' families and for our soldiers' families in terms of, you know, educational opportunities and benefits. Will Ainsworth has actually been really phenomenal at those kinds of bills. But the bills that we talk about, the bills that are the big ones, you see something like this PSC bill, which did stall out today, by the way. It's not gone, just stalled. But those bills, they drop quick and they pass quick, whereas the ones you're looking at, a Ten Commandment bill, others, not so much. Some of this regulatory reform, or some of the boards and commissions, the barriers to jobs, the barriers put on. I actually was looking at the special order calendars earlier, and one of them is to exempt something from the Barbara from the cosmetology and hair licensing board. You know, you need a license in this state, and I kid you not, to wash hair. Not, and there's no like training or anything. You just got to go, you got to pay the state. Who do we think is washing hair? Like who does this help? But there are fees and there are things that are hindrances to business, things that are hindrances to individuals who want to get out there and work that our state seems to leave on the table. And even just looking at, and I use some example, but Chris Pringle and the repealing bills when he was announced he was running for re-election, one of the things he was most proud of is repealing bills. In Florida, every legislative session, every legislator finds a bill that needs to be repealed and tries to repeal it. We should have that in Alabama. We should literally have lawmakers not just trying to push an agenda, but also scouring the books and saying, okay, this, we need to get rid of this. This is too much. That Alabama School of Social Work, putting an undue burden on the university. Check, gone. You know, you look at what we can do to change things, and it's not always more laws. Sometimes it's getting rid of existing laws or getting rid of existing burdens. All right, there's my my rant on that, because I really could do that for 3 hours straight. All right, we're going to take our last break here in just a minute. When we come back, I want to talk about, we'll get back into some of these national headlines. Breaking news, actually, before I go to this break, breaking news before the break, Governor Kay Ivey has signed the bill to enhance the, that says that if you harm a child, you are now eligible for the death penalty. It is 33 minutes ago. The Child Predator Death Penalty Act is now law. Woohoo. You know, yes. Absolutely. Those who target the youngest among us for the vilest crimes will soon be met with the harshest punishment. This is a statement from Governor Kay Ivey. She says, thank you to Representative Simpson and Senator Weaver for carrying one of my priority bills to the finish line. So looking at that, breaking news, the Child Predator Death Act penalty is now law. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll sort through the biggest headlines of the day. You guys hold tight.
I've always been cowboys, and they still are, it seems. Sadly in search of, and one step in back of themselves, and they're slow moving. Cowboys.
for Jeff. I guess y'all aren't a Lent crowd. I tell you what, quiet on the Lent, what you're giving up for Lent front. The text line is open, 251-343-0106. April Marie, you can find me on X. That's APRYLMARIE. May or may not go a little bit quieter. Won't go completely offline because I use it for work, but may go a little bit quieter on there. We'll see. All right. As I mentioned going into commercial break, the breaking news is that Governor Kay Ivey has in fact signed the Child Predator Death Penalty Act. I've talked about this on this show, this program before. I am incredibly pro-life. I know a lot of incredibly pro-life people. Paul DeMarco, who was on earlier, incredibly pro-life. This is a bill that's necessary and needed. This is a bill where you there's no rehabilitation for someone capable of the horrific crimes that this bill covers. There is no rehabilitation. You have to be a special kind of sick, a special kind of evil, and I am wholeheartedly behind this. In Governor Kay Ivey's statement on signing the bill, she said, this is a quote. For far too long, the most vulnerable of our society have lacked the most stringent legal protection from child predators. Through the Child Predator Death Penalty Act, Alabama now joins a handful of states imposing the toughest penalty possible for child predators. Those who target the youngest among us for the vilest crimes will soon be met with the harshest punishment under the law. It was sponsored, of course, by Representative Matt Simpson and Senator April Weaver. Those who are convicted of felony sexual crimes against a child, first-degree rape, first-degree sodomy, and first-degree sexual assault for kids under the age of 12 will now automatically become capital offenses punishable by death. Representative Simpson said, with the signing of the Child Predator Death Penalty Act into law, Alabama has taken a decisive action to ensure that the most horrific offenses committed against minors face the maximum punishment our legal system permits. This law sends a clear message that we will not stand by while young lives are shattered. Those who commit such unspeakable crimes will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. I am grateful for Governor Ivey for her steadfast leadership. And he goes on to thank Ivey. This is a no-brainer. And as I was looking into some of the opposition to it, as I was looking into what others had said, the number, this is very much one of those bills where the more states that pass it, we've got our texter over here saying it's grandstanding. You know what? This is one of those... this is one of those situations where you can make light of nearly any thing that's done politically, nearly anything that's done on a national scale. But if you're making light of a child rapist, you need to find yourself a church to go into, and you need to take a minute to reexamine your humanity. I'm serious. If you find yourself out there going, no, these people should live. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I was wondering what was taking her so long. I guess they were getting everything ready. It's been about a week since the bills went to Governor Kay Ivey. But in looking at this, courts have said that the death penalty is cruel and unusual. They can overcome the unusual. You overcome that by more and more states putting laws into place and sentencing these absolute degenerates, these monsters, to the death penalty. Suddenly, it's not that unusual anymore, and suddenly it's a very it should be absolutely common. Those who are saying and again, this is like one of those no brainers, I go back to those ICE protests when they're trying to get horrific people off the state. You're going, you really want to be the guy standing outside banging on the cops' cars as they try to take away a rapist or a murderer? Like, what's going on in your life right now? But this is one of those crimes where you will never, fully comprehend what it, the trauma it does to a victim. If you haven't learned or lived or heard about the experiences of these children. And unfortunately, in researching crimes and in researching, I've done a lot to kind of try to get wrap my head around our criminal justice system. I've read stories of families and victims. You look at Bibb County and you go, why do these people deserve to live? And there's no justification. So Good on the governor for this bill. I could go on about that, but I won't. I am just saying absolutely crazy times. All right, Michael texted in that my 9-year-old daughter told my wife she's planning on giving up cleaning her room for Lent. That's a good one, Michael. We actually talked about it as a family in the car yesterday. I was talking to the kids about Lent and what they're giving up. And the kids all suggested that they everything they wanted to give up was things they don't like to do anyway. And I was like, yeah, that's not the way Lent works. One of the 7-year-olds suggested that he give up vegetables for Lent. And I was like, yeah, that's not an option, dude. Like, we're going to have to work on this list. Ultimately, I think I've got in my head, we're going to make them a short list and let them choose the thing they're giving up for Lent. Okay. Looking back at today's headlines, we'll see if there's any additional breaking news while we were on air here. Looking back at today's headlines, we started the show talking about ICE, and what's going on around the state of Alabama. I'm so proud of our elected officials. I think I would be happy if every single one of them took a independent stand and said, yep, send more ICE agents here. As you pull out of Minnesota, go ahead and send them to Alabama. Here's the situation. This is one of those, again, with a no-brainer. If we are going to really get out everyone hiding here, then come on, bring it. AL.com reported yesterday surges, and I follow the same. Facebook groups that are stalking, and that's really what they're doing. They're stalking ICE agents. They're taking pictures. They're identifying the vehicles. And it's not just happening in liberal states. It's happening right here in Alabama. We're seeing those watching this, seeing a surge in officers. And I think it's great. Talked a little bit about the mass shooting up in Canada. I am still insanely just, dumbfounded by the number of media outlets, and it continues to grow, that are identifying this man, this young man, as a woman. And in a press conference earlier today, law enforcement identified him as a woman, which is insane. We've absolutely got to get it where it's commonplace for us to call crazy crazy. And this young man appeared to be crazy. And he was enabled by people around him, and as he went about his life, it looks like committing arson, committing assaults before this. It's really kind of crazy, to be honest. Talked about that. I don't see any new news on the Savannah Guthrie mother's case. They found gloves that they were looking into yesterday. The FBI neighborhood canvas. They are continuing to look for things. I think the local law enforcement bungled this one. I tell you what, there are not a lot, and it happens with these big cases. You can tell it in the high insight, but I'm looking at this and I really, this is frightening. I'm glad they were able to get some of that video footage. They said today that they think that there's possibly, you can see a possible tattoo or part of a tattoo on those videos. I'm not a big Megyn Kelly fan, but she did a reenactment of what you can get off of those cameras, so they might have more than they released. All right. Well, it's been fun. Tomorrow you guys are going to have Rebecca Watson on with you. I believe there is a best of Sean's show coming up, but you guys stay tuned for that. It is always good to be here. I appreciate you. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend.